This recording is labeled explicit. Mature audiences only. Parental discretion is advised.
Bitch alert! Bitch alert! Bitch alert! Attention, all you bitches! Listen up. Dr. Moe is on the air.
This is the Rude Guy, checking in from Maui, and this is the show with something to offend everybody.
This is Adina Howard, and you're listening to Dr. Mo on the Danger Zone Show.
What we have here, little yellow sister, is a magnificent specimen of pure Alabama black snake, but ain't too goddamn buku.
Hello, bitches, this is Dr. Mo. Welcome to the Danger Zone.
The only souls accused of hit and run. Tire tracks all across your back. I can see you had your fun, but darling, can't you see my signals turn from green to red? And with you, I can see a traffic jam straight up ahead. You're just right. So hard to get through to you.
Welcome to the Danger Zone, Dr. Mo. It's been a while, bitches. But guess what's going on? There's a national funk going on in the United States. About 72% of Americans say that they are dissatisfied with how things are going in this country. And only 26% say they're happy with it. So there's a group of 26% of the people in America who say, hey, guess what? Shit is going great right now. I'm loving it. Well, in 1992, that was the last time that more than a third of respondents were satisfied. When the first President Bush was ousted from the White House and Ross Perot received the highest percentage of the vote of any third-party candidate in 80 years, that's when people were satisfied. Way back then, when Clinton was about to come into the White House, and that was a long time ago. He was elected amid an economic angst. Things were tight and tough. We had this Republican reshoot of the Reagan years with President Bush, and that was just the where we were at the time. 71% are unhappy with the U.S. progress in the war in Iraq. We don't know if there's an end to this thing. When does it end? When does it start? Who's in charge, and who's giving us answers? Nobody. In every case, 72% are unhappy with the availability and affordability of health care. Let me tell you, this health care problem is real in the United States. I mean, we're like the biggest country, and among the other biggest countries who are as powerful as we are, we're like the worst in health care. I mean, that should tell us something. Well, I'm sure everybody realizes all our cash is in Iraq right now, and there's just not enough money to figure out health care. 66% of Americans are unhappy with the way government officials are doing their job. Yeah, well, doing a government job, it's not a regular job. It's a job, it's a job that's got, its twists and turns and some things you got to do, things you got to say, ways you got to be. Obviously, you can't be perfect. It's not a real job. It's more of a government job, so things are different there. Who are the rare, happy people in America? Well, the answer to that is got to be obvious to you. Affluent Americans and people with money are more satisfied than those with lower incomes, obviously. Conservatives are more satisfied than liberals. And men are more satisfied than women. Not a good thing. American healthcare is also getting a thumb down. Or a thumbs down in the world. I'm sure you've heard Rudy Giuliani's recent radio ad claiming that we have the best healthcare system in the world. Well, sure, the former governor has a team of fabulous doctors and stellar health insurance. With all that cash, he's got up his ass to books the $100,000 per appearance, where he talks about 9/11 for an hour and a half. Interesting. Giuliani should realize the rest of the country isn't as fortunate as he is. Americans apparently spend double what people in other industrialized countries do on healthcare. But we have more trouble seeing doctors. We're the victims of more medical type errors. And we go without treatment the most often in the world compared to nations that are sort of like us, as powerful as us. Apparently, the United States, Britain, Germany, Netherlands, Canada, New Zealand, and Australia were surveyed. And out of that entire group, America is the only country not to have universal health care coverage. Apparently, they figured it out. It's working for them. But we're nowhere near that. We actually spent $6,687 per person on health care in 2005. That's 16%. Of the GDP. Can you Jesus. Every other country spent less than half of that. Australia spent $3,100. Canada spent $3,300. Those are like the highest amount. Canada spent the highest amount of money per person on healthcare. And it's still less than half of what we spent. We're the only ones to report significant problems paying our medical bills. About 19% of Americans have trouble paying their medical bills. Also, 30% of Americans say they paid at least $1,000 out of their own pockets for healthcare over the past year. People are having to pay a lot of money. I mean, it's $1,000. But here's the thing, too. I feel almost like, you know, in America, you make a lot more money, so it's probably going to cost you more. We don't have any sort of national healthcare system that helps subsidize some of that stuff. You got insurance only if you're working. If you're not working, your insurance is going to cost you out the fucking ass. All right? It's a very bad thing. In Great Britain, it's about 4% of people in Great Britain are having problems paying their medical bill compared to, 19% in the United States. Two out of every five Americans, that's about 37% right now, two out of every five Americans has been skipping medications or a doctor's visit because of the expense. Too much to go to the doctors. If you don't have insurance, you're not paying $10 or copay. Hey, this is like $75 a pop. I mean, you got to go in there. You got to pay. I was like, you can't go to the doctor. I can't afford it. Unless I have a job that gives me insurance and they pay like, you know, I don't know, $30 to $50 every paycheck twice a month. And I get to go to the doctor for $10 and get medication for like $10 per prescription, if I get a prescription plan. But otherwise, I'm fucked. The physical, $75. You just go to the doctor, he takes a look at you. It's a lot of money. Medicine, like $385 for skin medicine. And you get it for $50 as a copay for the pharmacy plan. Huge difference there. Unbelievable. 42% of Americans with chronic conditions I had to skip medication and doctor's visits because it's way too expensive. Of all the countries, Americans reported the highest number of medical errors. 32% of Americans said they've experienced lab medication or other medical errors, or people don't give a shit about the shit they give you. They'll give you something, it's not right, then you've got to go back and fight for that. And there's nothing to prevent people from making errors. They're all idiots coming out of college trying to do a job and pay for that BMW they just bought. They don't give a shit. Listen, this is what I did. I did that. If you make a mistake, that could kill somebody. But being the most advanced country, we're making the most mistakes. Oops, I give you asthma medicine instead of those heart pills. I guess you're fucked if you have a heart attack and you try to pop one of those. I'm sorry. 32% of people. That's a lot of errors, let me tell you. Lot of errors. Americans came in dead last in terms of doctors having access to their medical records at the time of an office visit. Most of our doctors never have access to our medical records. But the thing is, if you really look, that that little measuring thing where doctors don't have access to medical records for their patients to come in. Here's the thing. If we're not set up on a national healthcare type system, the data is not centralized. You know, Big Brother doesn't have all of your shit yet, so it's hard to kind of access it. If you have a centralized healthcare, national healthcare system, obviously everything goes into one pile, so all the doctors can access it. And that definitely limits the issue of not having access to your medical records when you go to doctors. Americans had a hard time getting in to see their doctors. In Germany, the Netherlands, and New Zealand, everybody says they had no trouble going in to see their doctors. Only 30% of Americans say they could get same-day appointments with their physicians. And two-thirds say they had a hard time finding healthcare nights, weekends, or holidays. If you're working at a factory or some shit, you really don't have that much time. You've got a crazy schedule, and you're working during, you know, medical service hours. You know, so they're like bankers. It's really hard sometimes to find a doctor that's open when you need them to be. And so that's difficult. A lot of people just can't even get a fucking appointment, can't even go in. It's just not able to go in. I'm sorry. It's not happening. So most Americans are unhappy with shit, and obviously our healthcare is getting a thumbs down to good healthcare or to its status and its effectiveness compared to other countries who are spending as much money as we are or making as much money as we are. The other pain in the ass that's happening out there is Army contractors. Are they ill-trained? Are they wasteful? Are they corrupt? A lot of military contractors in the United States have been killed by legislators and the press. I mean, they are just being harassed completely. I'm not saying it's a good or bad reason. All I'm saying is this. There's probably a reason. Private U.S. companies like Halliburton and Blackwater have engaged in a lot of corruption and, you know, all over the world in their military underwater black ops secure operations bullshit. They spend a lot of money. They behave badly, like they kill Iraqi citizens. They don't act like they're soldiers. They figure, you know, we're private security contractors. Our job is to kill anybody. We don't care. We're going to fight our own little war. We're going to kill as many people as we need to protect whoever we're protecting who's going from one building to another with our paychecks. No problem. We don't give a shit. Unbelievable. The contracting disasters are being brought up to the attention of an independent watchdog panel in Washington. Army Secretary Pete Garron is wanting to take a good look at that. There's a report out there that they put together which shows how ill-trained these guys are. These guys may not be former soldiers. Of course, there are a lot of former American military who become private security contractors for security firms like Halliburton and Blackwater, but a lot of those guys are not. A lot of those guys are just angry cops who want to kill ragheads. You've got anybody who really thinks that they could be a fucking security consultant is going in and getting hired, and they're going over there. They're not trained well. They're not soldiers after all. So the whole chain of command thing, even though when they run around in the field, they play around calling each other, sir, yes, sir, execute my orders, our orders are blah, blah, blah. But that doesn't mean that they have the military discipline needed to not create this crazy culture of waste, fraud, and corruption and stuff. It's ridiculous. The Army actually oversees a $4 billion a year budget in contracts for food, water, shelter, and other supplies to sustain the United States forces in Iraq, Kuwait, and Afghanistan. So a lot of these security contractors are being paid with that money. And that money is also buying the supplies that are going over there, guarded by said security contractors. Unbelievable. I hope they're going to come up with some suggestions to fix this problem. But basically, like as of October 24th, I think the Army reported that it had 83 criminal inquiries related to contract fraud in Iraq. 83. They're looking at 83 problems based on fraud in Iraq, Kuwait, and Afghanistan. Additionally, 23 military and civilian staff members face criminal charges, and over $15 million in bribes have been uncovered. $15 million in bribes. Out of that $43 billion budget, $15 million has been paid out to people to get themselves the latest German luxury car, house in the Poconos. They look the other way. Hefty amount, 30 grand, 15 grand, get you a new Lexus. Get that hot tub you've been dying to build in your Colorado mansion that you've paid for with money you've taken for accepting bribes in Iraq. Unbelievable. You basically need more people. You need better trained people, people not just trained in contracting, but really people disciplined and held accountable, I think. Just because you send out these, contractors out there and, you give them a gun and you hire them, doesn't mean that they know what they're doing. There's got to be some sort of accountability. Now, I'm not asking for the government to fucking sit behind their backs and watch everything they do, but there should be some sort of process where they are reporting what they're doing. So that there is some sort of accountability. But the thing is, they're mercenaries. The people that, my cousin Igor, he knows how to kill. You need to hire him. Okay, I will hire him. We'll hire him to come work for us, Russian branch of American CIA, for contracting in Iraq. It's just not happening. Not a good thing. We have got to get over this thing. Not excited about the way things are going in Iraq. Not excited about the way things are going in the government. I think people are very pissed. And I think people want answers. I don't think they're getting answers. But they definitely want answers. George Bush is saying that bin Laden is just like Lenin from Russia. Now he's just trying to bring us back to that the commies thing that worked for his papa. Now we realize with all the documentaries that they're people like us and they're engaged in a civil war. And he goes, wait, 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 they're like the commies. They're like the commies. He also says bin Laden's like Hitler. Hey, bin Laden is like Adolf Hitler. He has a big mustache, even though he could cut it to look like Adolf. He raises his hand to greet his soldiers and have them fire on our American troops. You're killing me here. You're killing me. Nothing good for me here. Nothing. My God. Oh, thanks to global warming, a Tennessee town has officially run out of water. They're out of water. It's done. Poor guys. The town is called Orme, Tennessee, and they're completely out of water. The water tank that they use is dry. Unbelievable. The guy who manages the tank has to turn it on and off because there's been a severe drought all across the southeast. It's threatening the water supply of cities large and small, and it's sending politicians scrambling for solutions. They don't know what to do. But there is no more water in Orme, Tennessee. The mighty waterfall that fed the mountain hamlet has been reduced to a trickle. And now the creek running through the center of town is dry. 3 days a week, the volunteer fire chief hops in a 1961 fire truck at 5:30 a.m. before the school bus blocks the narrow road and drives a few miles to an Alabama fire hydrant. He meets with another fire truck from a nearby New Hope, Alabama. The two drivers make about a dozen runs back and forth, hauling about 20,000 gallons of water from the hydrant to Orme's tank. They have to go to a fire hydrant to get water now. They're so out of water, they have to go to a fire hydrant. They're out. There is no more water for that town. So, a couple of things are going to happen. They're either going to drain that fucking tank dry and find another fucking fire hydrant to pull it from, or they're going to have to move out of there and go back to where there is water, which means the American population is probably going to, in the southeast, is going to huddle up around the areas that have water. They're going to drain those fucking things twice as fast. And that's going to be a problem. Unbelievable, in Orme, Tennessee, they had a population of thousands in the 1930s. It's Orme, I think, not Orme. Orme. They had three schools. They had a hotel. Now, nothing going on. The coal miners went on strike in the 1940s. The company shut down the mine, and the town has never been the same. Not a single business is left in Orme, Tennessee. It's just an old, aging wooden rail depot that sits 3 feet above the eerily quiet streets. They just got cable TV. They still don't have cell phones. And the main road in town is still barely wide enough for two cars to pass each other. Got dogs in the streets. Farm animals can be heard around town. Unbelievable. You walk into Orm, Tennessee, it's like walking back in time. It's like Never Never Land there. Can you imagine? The mayor elected in December has spent $8,000 of the city's annual $13,000 budget to deal with the crisis. Most of the money went toward trucking water from Alabama. We got to get water. They've received $377,000 from the U.S. Department of Agriculture as an emergency grant. He wants to use this to lay a half-mile pipe to connect Orme to the Bridgeport, Alabama water supply, hopefully by Thanksgiving. They don't have any water, I'm telling you. They have got to go get water, and they got to figure out how they're going to drink. I mean, that's got to be difficult. How do you live like that? My God. Anyway, the Brigadier General Paul Tibbetts and Brigadier General Paul Tibbetts Jr. was the pilot of the Enola Gay. He was the young pilot who flew the Enola Gay, the B-29 Super Fortress that dropped the atomic bomb on Hiroshima in the final days of World War II. He was the guy responsible for the murder of thousands of Japanese and the pollution of their air and their food and the mercury with the atomic. It's like a fucking Chernobyl over there. Anyway, Paul Tibbetts Jr. was nothing but a lieutenant back then. And I guess he continued flying missions, stayed in the military, and became a one-star general in the, I believe it's the United States Air Force, maybe the Army. He was colonel. I think he was a colonel back then. So can you imagine? It took him 45. It took him over, like, how many years to make general? I'm not saying. Maybe he was a drunk. I mean, you got to drink yourself to sleep on that. They called the bomb Little Boy. Dropped it at 8:15 a.m. local time, 31,000 feet. The bomb exploded at 1,800 feet above the ground. It didn't explode when it touched it. It exploded when it got there. I left tens of thousands dead and dying and turned much of Hiroshima, a city of some 250,000 people, into a scorched ruin. Unbelievable. Colonel Tibbetts actually dove his plane to ground, towards ground zero, and then dropped his bomb over there. Unbelievable. I mean, this guy has got to be thinking about this. On August 15th, Japan surrendered and was like, oh my God, forget about it. We can't hang with you guys. Paul Tibbetts, pilot of Enola Gay, dies at 92 years old. He's dead now. He's gone. Hopefully he'll get a little bit of peace from his legacy, his life story, the things he's been responsible for. Pretty tough. I mean, I don't know how you live with that, but Tropical Storm Noel was in the Caribbean making a huge mess, claimed 107 lives. 107 people died, including in Nassau, Bahamas. It was sustaining winds about 80 miles an hour and was coming towards the United States. 107 people, unbelievable. There was flooding, and in central Cuba, 2,000 tons of corn, potato, banana, cucumbers, and tomato harvests were ruined. 2,000 homes were ruined. We're talking about 3 days of heavy rain causing an estimated $30 million in damages to the Dominican Republic. A lot of things going nuts. 43 people dead in Haiti. Yikes. I mean, this thing is killing people. 73 dead in the Dominican Republic. Done. One person, I think, was killed in Jamaica. Tropical Storm Noel racing up the coast and creating hell and high water. These things, there's got to be a way for us to find a way to, like, not, you know, spend all this money. I mean, there's got to be a way. Do you know what I mean? It's got to be a way. So this year we find that there is the lowest number of recruits in history of an all-voluntary American Army. The United States Army began its recruiting year October 1st with fewer signed up for basic training than in any year since it became an all-volunteer army in 1973. Wow. There's the least amount of people trying to go and get killed in Iraq because there's this real problem. People know about Iraq now. It's going to be tough to send kids over there. To even have parents want to let their kids go over there, do everything that they can to stop that. Granted, the kids have their own minds and they'll do what the fuck they want to do, but the parents have something in terms of their preference for sending their kids into a fucking battlefield. You don't know. You send your kid over there, he gets on a fucking truck on his way to the goddamn base, IUD, on the road. Done. 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 And then what? That you're going to feel good about your fucking self, I'm sure. They have a new recruiting goal. It looks like it's going to be even more difficult than not. More difficult now than ever. The Army has decided that it must grow its active duty force by several thousand soldiers a year in order to relieve strain on war-weary troops. So, now that the least amount of people are signing up to go to the military because it's a fucking crazy-ass war and they're sure to get killed, the people that are already in have nobody to relieve them so that they can come home. So we want the troops to come home, but there's nobody to send over there. Granted, we're not leaving Iraq. That's out of the question. They won't let us go, the government. So we're forced to stay over there. The only way we can maintain an effective presence over there is to have trained troops, a scheduled regular rotation of trained troops, fresh troops that can come in, replenish the ranks of people that have died or that are hurt, that have had to go back, or people that have been fighting for 3 years. And at this point, we just don't have enough people. I had a listener of the show emailed me saying, we need to ratchet up the benefits of joining the military and market it well. Either way, we need enough gullible but strong folks defending the country and protecting me. I don't think it's gullible, dude. His name is Christopher, I think. Chris, I wouldn't call it gullible. I mean, you might know that the government's full of shit. Don't think for one second that those kids over there dying, going crazy, are just doing it like blindly and dumbly. I mean, they're Americans. They learn things. They're smart. They talk to each other. They watch the news. They read papers when they have a moment. So, I mean, they understand that this is like an ongoing thing, but they also realize, being there, that they have a job to do. I don't think that's gullible, sir. I don't think that's gullible at all. I semi take offense to that. American soldiers are not gullible. There are plenty of reasons why people join the military, and I don't think it's because that they're gullible at all. I think it's because they made a choice. And whatever their choice is probably based on what they know and don't know. So maybe in that area, you may have a point, given that they might not know everything, or all of it, or all that they need to know to make the best decision, and then the decision that they make is only based on what they know. And then they act on that. But those are the motherfuckers that are courageous enough to know that they're going into a fucking battle zone. Those guys know they go over there, they're going to get killed. They know that. So that's what you have to think about. Unbelievable, though. This is a shame. I sort of took offense to that. I didn't really like that comment. Somebody sent me that comment a while ago, but I just wanted to put it out there. The truth is here, the things that we're doing in Iraq don't really have an end. Don't really you have a beginning. We're not so sure how to handle them or where we're going with that. So be grateful that you have somebody who's willing to go over there and stick their lives on the line for your dumbass, Chris. And don't fucking email me anymore, you dumbass. I mean, kind of stupid shit is that? Come on, you're being a dummy. Several hundred U.S. diplomats vented anger and frustration about the State Department's decision to force foreign service officers to take jobs in Iraq, with some likening it to a potential death sentence. So the State Department is sending a bunch of U.S. diplomats and foreign service officers in Iraq, to Iraq, to take these jobs. A bunch of those people who are under threat of dismissal, like the bad State Department employees who are in trouble, like you grab your boss's ass, you got a lawsuit coming, or you've been late for, you know, every day this month, you're a bastard, or you sleep at your job, you give your boss an attitude, you are black, whatever. We're going to send you to Iraq. You have to go to Iraq. You have to go take a job at the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. And you have to go work in reconstruction teams in the outlying provinces. You have to go to Iraq. If you want me to forget about the bad shit you did here at the State Department, if you still want your pension, if you don't want to get fired, we're sending you to Iraq. Outstanding. Great way to deal with troublemakers, United States government. Send them to the war zone which you've created. It's like America's created their own little bad, you're in the corner. You go in the corner. This is George Bush. All you bad foreign service diplomats, go in the corner. You go in the bad corner. You've been a bad boy. I'm not going to talk to you. I'm not going to tell you anymore. I'm like Super Nanny of the United States government. You're going to the corner. Super Nanny says you're going to Baghdad. You've been bad, baby. You're heading to Baghdad. God, that's got to be horrible. Maybe you think about it, like, I got to quit or something. I'm quitting the government. I want out. I don't want it. In the green zone, there's a bunch of rockets and things coming into the green zone. It's fucking dangerous over there. It's dangerous in Iraq. They want to send those guys out there. That is hilarious that the government wants to send their troublemakers to Iraq as a punishment. They're using those guys to fill in the ranks that soldiers are not filling as much anymore because they're being killed, literally. It's like a death sentence. They're being sentenced to death. If you've been a bad government employee, you're going to be sentenced to death and you're going to be sent to Iraq. Unbelievable. Hilarious. Apparently, In state Supreme Court in the Bronx, New York, jurors for the first time found the defendant guilty under New York statute, and he did not fit the stereotype of a terrorist. Edgar Morales, a 25-year-old recreational soccer player and gang member who fatally shot a 10-year-old girl and wounded a second man outside a christening party in 2002. He's a baby-faced construction worker, a member of the St. James Boys, which is a gang described in a trial as being formed by Mexican immigrants to protect themselves from being assaulted and robbed by other gangs in the West Bronx. Other gangs of Mexicans. Mexicans killing each other. White people are having a great time. So this guy killed this kid, and he's being convicted under the terror law as a terrorist. That's great. And this means that this guy over in the Bronx, Edgar Morales, 25 years old, he is a recreational soccer player. What kind of fucking job is that? Those are the kind of jobs like gang members have. What are you? I'm a recreational soccer player. What about you? I'm an occasional picture hanger. And you? Well, I light candles once in a while. It doesn't keep me busy or anything, but then at night I kill. So those people out there, this guy's being linked now to Al-Qaeda. They should just send his ass to Iraq. They should take all the criminals who steal, rob, kill, put them on a fucking Hercules C-5 and send them out to Iraq. Why don't you send them out there and see if they can help? You want to kill somebody, bitch? Here's a fucking M16. Here's a Kevlar helmet and a radio. Good luck and Godspeed. We want you to go feel what it's like to kill. You want to kill, motherfucker? You want to kill? Get on this plane. I'll take you somewhere where you can kill. You can kill. So this group here, Mr. Morales and his gang, have terrorized Mexicans and Mexican-Americans in the West Bronx for years through violence and intimidation. It's a crazy thing because they put this gang together. Mexicans unite to protect each other from the other gangs. But then you're killing your own fucking people. That's a problem. It just doesn't work. You're killing your own people. He's a criminal. But I don't see why there is a need and how even that connects the dots to link a street killer in the Bronx to Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. People don't know what to do anymore. They're like, you know what? You're a fucking Al-Qaeda. You're going in. I don't know what you do. I think they're misusing these terror laws. This is too much. I mean, how much of this are we going to be doing here? This is ridiculous. Let's end this, please. Send them to Iraq to die. If they want to die and kill, go over there. No problem. Interesting fact here. Another gay Republican bites the dust. Washington State lawmaker Richard Curtis. This is another Washington State guy. There was another Washington State senator, Republican senator, who became mayor of Spokane, Washington. Turns out he was soliciting gay favors from guys on the internet. He even went as far as to try and give one of his internet gay lovers a job in the government of the town that he was a mayor of. Look at that. You know, now we don't have to meet at Joey's bar, you know, 39 miles away once a week. Now we can have meetings in my office every day, and you can suck my dick there, and nobody will be the wiser. Washington State lawmaker Richard Curtis. A lot of fags in Washington. Something's going on. He resigned his office after a man he allegedly paid for sex spoke to the media about the encounter. Listen, if you're going to be like a big top-notch politician, yeah, you know, and the thing with gay sex is that you have to go out of your way to find some guy you could bang like off the street that nobody knows. But then he's going to find out who the fuck you are. He's going to tell. He's going to bring your ass down when you say, I can't see you no more. Or I won't give you any money or something. Unbelievable. The guy spoke to the media about the sex encounter. Curtis is the third conservative lawmaker in just as many months, 3 months, to resign amid allegations of soliciting gay sex. Ooh, bad, gay, bad, gay, G-A-Y, B-A-D, very bad. A lot of similarities between this guy and the other Republican scandals out there involving homosexuality. Guy comes out and says, I sincerely apologize for any pain my actions may have caused. This has been damaging to my family. I don't want him to be subjected to any additional pain that might result from carrying out this matter and the scrutiny that comes with holding public office. Well, what are you going to do? Are you gay? Are you admitting? 3 days earlier, Curtis had insisted to his local newspaper that he was not gay and that sex was not involved in what he said was an extortion attempt by a man last week. Oh, so I was right. The guy he was banging, the guy whose dick he was sucking 39 miles away and in a bumblefuck town somewhere far away from his own hometown. So he was banging that guy, and then the guy started wanting more time with him, realized he was some sort of powerful guy, probably because he had a BlackBerry, nice suits, came in a Lincoln Continental or Denali SUV, and he's like, you know, this fucking guy. And he goes, listen, you know, just give me, you know, $500. I just got to pay my rent. I need some money. The guy's like, no, fuck that. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm fucking telling. He's like, fuck you. You tell, I'll have you killed. And he goes to the media and tells. And then Curtis goes, I'm not gay. This guy's fucking with me. Curtis said he was being extorted by a man he had sex with in a Spokane hotel room. The other man contends Curtis reneged on a promise to pay $1,000 for sex. So he was going to go over there, he was going to pay the money, he didn't pay. He probably said, yeah, I'll give you, it's probably $100 for sex, but the guy found out that Curtis was rich. He was like, give me $1,000. Curtis said, fuck that. He left in Spokane, the very same town whose Republican mayor was also gay and extorting or trying to hire gay men he met on the internet to work at his office that he was developing relationships with. Wow, so much gay stuff out there. Don't you hate it when somebody catches you being gay? Wouldn't it be easier if you was just a fag and you were just faggot and that was it? And people would look at you and be like, you faggot, and you would look at them and go, yeah, go fuck yourself, whatever. Isn't that easier than to come out of the closet and get caught? Well, anyway, on the Danger Zone, you can be gay as much as you want. You can be as gay as Christmas, as O1LT says, and I don't give a shit. Thank you for listening to Dr. Mo on the Danger Zone show. And you are now exiting the Danger Zone. Good night, bitches.